Hey everybody, Marty here. On this week's episode of In Park Tracks, I get to hand the studio over to In Park editor Judith Rubin, who had the lucky opportunity to speak with the one and only Monty Lundy. Monty not only founded Technifex, but he's also the founder of the Themed Entertainment Association, or TEA. Judy actually spent a good chunk of her career as TEA's publicist, so she's worked with and gotten to know Monty quite well over the years. She'll be able to fill you in on all his details and background. So, without further ado, here's Judy.
Pioneering special effects company Technifex collaborates with experienced designers on the leading edge. Recent examples include the Dreamscape immersive venues and Stranger Things, The Experience. But there's more. Technifex was founded in 1984 by Monty Lundy and Rock Hall. Today, in the year 2022, Monty Lundy is still there as CEO, and the company is celebrating 38 years of success. I have known Monty for most of those 38 years. He is one of those who helped to create Disney's Epcot and went on to become an industry leader in his own right. In this interview, he talks about the origins of Technifex and what he calls its chameleon culture, about recent projects, about the Themed Entertainment Association, or TEA, which he founded in 1991, and what's ahead for the attractions industry. You can find the companion article in issue 93 of In Park Magazine. Monty and I started out by talking about how Technifex was unique in identifying itself as a provider of special effects across the spectrum, not pegged to any particular medium or platform, but with the talent to produce them all and more. I thought about the origins of your company. You created a company to do special effects for attractions, and I don't know that anybody else labeled themselves that way. Was it a new concept?
I can't say for sure. There weren't other companies that labeled themselves that way, but I would say we probably were one of the first, if not the first. It really was born out of my history and Rock Hall's history. We both came from the Disney effects department and worked mostly focused on Epcot, but some other areas as well. During the early 80s, when Disney finished those projects, they let everybody go. And as a necessity of wanting to work in the industry, Rock and I formed Technifex with the idea that it would be an extension, basically, of what we were doing at Disney in terms of developing an array of effects systems and really being a custom design build shop for groups, individuals, and companies looking for theme park quality effects. And it did span a broad range of visual, mechanical, illusions. So we were much more generalists than other companies that have started later, which do focus on water effects or fire or what have you. And we feel that really has been a key to some of our longevity. We are very much kind of a chameleon type company, and that depending on what sort of effects are in favor, we're able to navigate those waters in terms of shifting our focus and our ability to deliver really what our clients need, not what we're trying to sell, if that makes sense.
You more often, I think, hear about companies that start with one or two things and then they have to diversify as the markets change. And you began diversified.
With the idea that we would be able to address a diverse set of markets and market verticals. So we were doing work in the trade show industry long before most companies from our themed entertainment industry were addressing trade shows. We were involved in Las Vegas and the major casino work before many others were involved as well. So we were able to hit a lot of verticals and not just focus on the traditional theme park market.
So it's not just knowing about those verticals, knowing about those different kinds of trades, but encompassing them from the beginning. So building the model for your business that way at the start has made it easy to go forward over the decades.
That would presume a lot more forethought than we probably exercised. It was more reactionary, where somebody from the trade show market said, hey, can you do this for us? And we said, sure. and we figured it out. It was more being open to practicing our craft in different markets. Now, that said, we got involved in the trade show market because a gentleman who worked with us in the effects department at Disney started his own company as well and came to us one day and said, hey, I'm going to go do the exhibitor show, and I was going to have another company partner with me in our booth, and he's dropped out. Would you guys like to do it with me? We'd never been to a trade show representing Technifex, but there again, we said, sure. And we built a little Pepper's Ghost display and brought it to the show, which was in Louisville, Kentucky that year. And we landed AT&T Consumer Products. Go figure. They became a client of ours for well over 10 years, having us produce pretty amazing displays for the CES show. They became the foundation, really, for us doing a great number of trade show type work for many Fortune 500 companies.
And that was the TechniScan, wasn't it? Your Pepper's Ghost product?
We had a trade name for it. It was TechniScan, that's correct. And it was really building kiosks with these little characters appearing and telling whatever our client's story was. The first one that we did for AT&T was greatly expanded from that. We ended up building a cutaway two-story house, and this character was talking about AT&T's security system. And we would get hundreds of people that would stop and watch it every time the show went. It was an absolute home run, and is why AT&T stayed with us for so many years. And every year we would create a new show. Most of the time it was TechniScan based, but not every time. And that was noticed by Nokia and Motorola and many others in the telecommunications industry, and they all became clients of ours.
So Monty, you've done some serious restructuring. You've created three companies all under the umbrella of Technifex Inc., Technifex LLC, Technifex Products, and Technifex XR. Can you walk us through that? It would be especially interesting to hear about the connection between Dreamscape Immersive and the Technifex Products division, and about your work with Bruce Vaughn.
I've split Technifex Inc. into basically three companies. So Technifex Inc. has been dropped down into being Technifex LLC. Technifex LLC does basically what people know Technifex for, which is designing, engineering, and building custom show systems. Technifex LLC is really that custom build. You come to us, tell us what your vision is, and we'll engineer and fabricate it for you. Technifex XR is primarily focused on developing training systems, and it's also a design build, mostly custom fabrication type operation. It's an offshoot of the original Technifex Inc. in terms of we're able to conceive and develop systems, but these are with a focus of training for military, fire, police. It's that kind of a governmental client base that we're speaking to. Technifex Products can provide a line of products to our clients in the LBE market. And that is much like the AT&T story, that really started out with one key client. And that client was Dreamscape Immersive. Bruce Vaughn and I knew each other from when he was at Disney. When he moved over to Dreamscape, he had a team that he formed to start to develop this vision for highly immersive VR experiences. And at some point, they decided they wanted to bring it to a higher level, basically. So they called us in and said, take a look at what we're doing and see if you can make these effects into something that can be more of a product that is a plug and play, with the idea that it's easy to service, it doesn't cost a lot to operate. So we had various parameters that they gave us. And we worked together with them to come up with an array of 4D effects that work really well with their VR experiences.
What was the timeline for all of this?
I would say that started about 4 to 5 years ago, well before COVID hit. And their first facility was in Century City in the mall. It was nice. It was a local venue. We kind of worked hand in hand in terms of the development of the effects and then the installation and the operation of the effects. Both us and Dreamscape being supportive of the other in terms of that development process and making sure that operationally everything worked the way it was supposed to. And now it's gone through even more iterations to where we've got these fairly inexpensive ways of creating mist and wind and rain and scent and all of that that could be applied to many types of LBE facilities.
This is showing that you don't have to be a giant theme park operator and build an enormous land and take 5 or 10 years to do it. You can do a little LBE thing that travels around.
Well, and with VR and AR, you know, you can have a much more visceral experience in a very small space. I mean, Dreamscape, the footprint is 16 by 16 feet. Your whole experience is in a very tight area.
And that's because of the VR element. You don't have to have the big space to walk through.
You don't have to, no. Your mind goes with the visuals. So if your eyes are seeing a 200-foot cliff, you're going to fill in that space, even though you aren't physically in that type of space, if that makes sense. So depending on the environment you create, you can simulate and get people to viscerally feel. That's the important thing. They actually feel like they're in a bigger space. The first time I did the Dreamscape experience, you know, they had me walking along a cliff edge with boards breaking out from under me, and I was there. I mean, I was not comfortable walking out, you know, around this cliff on these little planks because my mind took me right there. I knew that I was on a 16 by 16 foot platform, but my mind went right into the story and right into the environment that was presented to me.
Okay, so Monty, here's my understanding. Your Dreamscape work has helped you refine all of these modular products that can now be put into these experiences, and that's led to even more installations. And in addition to these newer products for projects like Dreamscape, you've productized some of the existing items that were already in your line, such as faux fire and fountain products, to make them work in a wider range of situations. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
So we have developed a rental business that's based on primarily our faux fire line of products and our flow screens. They lend themselves to being packaged in a way that they can be rolled in an anvil case or whatever and set up very easily and installed into many types of attractions. And, you know, fire is a very base element. So we have rental linear faux fire pieces that we call roadies. And then we also have rental campfires. So we have a lot of exhibit companies that will work with us. They're producing like the Game of Thrones exhibit, and they want something that simulates fire in the exhibit. They'll rent the system from us. So that's where those came from. It wasn't a direct result of our 4D work per se, but we supported it in the form of rentals as well.
Tell me a little bit about the evolution of faux fire.
We've been building it for many, many years. The first application was actually at Blackpool Pleasure Beach. They have an attraction based on the theme Valhalla. It's a water flume ride, and they wanted a lot of fire effects to be on either side of the ride trough, if you will. And they wanted them in very close proximity to the guests, so having real fire was just not really an option from a fire code standpoint and a guest safety standpoint. And Rock and I had been messing around with steam and lighting and other things already and had some idea of how we could make steam look like fire. And because steam is gaseous and kind of moves like a flame, lighting it properly and doing some other things to it actually makes it look very realistic in terms of a flame effect. From that, we've probably gone through 6 or 7 redevelopments of faux fire, for lack of a better term, trying to streamline the design, trying to bring down the cost. Back in the early days, we had to use the incandescent MR16 lamps to light the steam. They were problematic. They were hot. They took a tremendous amount of power, and there were some other drawbacks, but it worked. It worked well. And we were always waiting for the day when LEDs would get bright enough and be color saturated enough and so on and so forth. Well, we're there. We got there several years ago. And so everything is now LED based. The product that we sell now is something that we're very proud of. It's very well engineered. It's something that is very robust, very serviceable, very reliable.
If we could switch gears a little bit, would you be interested in talking about TEA, the 30th anniversary, how you're seeing the industry these days?
I've spent 30 years supporting TEA, and there is, you know, great young talent coming into the industry, into the organization. I think the TEA is on a great path. So it feels like the organization is hitting on all cylinders. It's truly an international organization. We have great representation in many different countries now. I just see the TEA as becoming the institution that we all hoped it would be. And it really is on a path that's going to make it self-sustaining for decades.
Well, as the founder, then that sounds like a good thing. You're looking at something you created and you're happy with where it is 30 years later.
I would say overall, yes, I am. It's hit most of the high notes of what the original vision was. And I think that it's become such an integral part of the fabric of our industry and such a connector relative to the networks and how people connect and how projects are connected, that I don't see it going away. It's becoming much more mature, much more of a process-oriented type industry. We're starting to get involved in many, many different markets. We are no longer theme park-centric. And that speaks a lot about the connection of our industry to so much of what's going on in the world.
You didn't talk about your anniversary event at Technifex.
It was great. There was an immense cross-section of the industry represented here, from the very young people who were still in school, all the way up to people who were my mentors. So it was this wonderful spectrum of talented individuals. I think we had 180 or close to it that came out. And it was a chance for us all to, you know, again, celebrate the 30th anniversary of the TEA and where it's at now. And then we kind of slid in that it was also Technifex's 38th anniversary. It was a great night. It was a lot of fun. I was able to talk a little bit about the TEA in the early days. I felt that it was very important to point out who the first board was of the TEA, because that was a challenging time. As I said, you know, we were developing something out of whole cloth. There was no basis for what we were doing. We were a new industry, and it was all owners of companies that came together to make that happen. So I felt it was important to kind of go back to the roots and point out these founding members, charter members, who really were the basis for the whole association. I also handed out a list of all the charter members so that people could understand who they were. There are companies that were represented by individuals who gave their time, their money, their effort, their influence to create what we have now 30 years later.
The last story we did with you, you said, bring us your impossible ideas. So have you received any impossible ideas since then?
Yes, is the short answer. I can say that a lot of them go away. There are a lot of people with great ideas and interesting impossible, in quotes, ideas, but they don't have the budgets in our part of the industry. We are creating unusual, often very custom systems, and there are clients that just don't understand the cost or even the entire process that you're going to have to go through to develop custom systems.
Okay, that's the story of the industry over and over and over again, isn't it?
It is, and it's why I tell my staff we're a service company. In the end, we provide the service of getting you from the idea all the way through to the end product. And the service that we offer is holding your hand, taking the time to understand what the big idea is, and taking you through the concept development, the mock-ups, the engineering, and all of those steps in a way that you understand what you're getting into, you understand the costs associated with it, and in the end, hopefully, we've built a bridge of trust between us and our clients and that they want to use us again. But it's the service of what we're doing that's really important. The end product is the end product. It's the final embodiment of the vision. But you have to go through certain phases to get an end product that's going to work and be reliable and warrantable and serviceable and all of those things.
Thanks so much. It was such a pleasure to get to talk.
Well, nice talking with you. Good to see you. I'm glad life's treating you well.
This has been In Park Tracks, the audio companion to In Park Magazine. For more information and to sign up for a free subscription, visit inparkmagazine.com/subscribe. In Park Tracks is a production of In Park Magazine. Today's episode was recorded by Judith Rubin and edited by me, Martin Plicky, and Jordan Zuha. Music on today's show was Simply Cheerful by Raphael Crux. In Park staff includes Judith Rubin, Joe Kleiman, and Jordan Zuha.